In 1997, a Cleveland-based geneticist, Dr. Caris Eng, was studying a rare disease called Cowden syndrome. It causes sometimes cancerous tumors. And she found that Cowden syndrome is caused by a mutation in a gene called PTEN. Then over years of research, she started noticing that many of her Cowden patients also had autism. And she wondered whether PTEN might also be implicated in autism, particularly since people with each, the cancer and the autism, shared physical characteristics like having larger heads. So Eng teamed up with another researcher and screened 18 kids with autism and found 3 had the PTEN gene. On went the light bulb. Eng realized a cancer-causing gene could also be causing autism. Now, her conclusions were so unorthodox that she couldn't get a paper published, but in the 15 or so years since that initial discovery, not only has her paper been published, but other genes have also been identified as linking cancer and autism. Alisa Opar writes about the connection in the journal Spectrum. She joins us from the studios of KQED in San Francisco. Welcome.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
So a reminder for people, autism affects about 1 in 68 kids in the U.S., more boys than girls, wide spectrum of symptoms, language impairment, social deficits. But when it's treated or cared for, it's usually pinpointing some of those deficits.
That's right. The U.S. Food and Drug Administration has approved 2 drugs to treat irritability and agitation in children with autism. But so far, no medications have been approved for treating the core symptoms of autism, such as social deficits and repetitive behavior.
Okay. And now we have this possible nexus with a gene that causes tumors, which are sometimes cancerous tumors. It wasn't long after Dr. Eng's research that researchers in other cancer fields also noticed the same thing she did, some sort of nexus between autism and these genes. And now it's thought that half the patients with a tumor condition that's called tuberous sclerosis have autism as well.
Yes, that's correct. When Dr. Eng first made the connection in the early 2000s, it was one of the first times that a cancer gene was linked to autism. Since then, there have been other cases where mutations in genes that have long been linked to cancer have been shown to be linked to autism as well, and tuberous sclerosis is one of those.
So we're not talking about all cases of autism, and we're not talking about all cases of cancer, all types of cancer-causing genes. But just the fact that we are talking about a nexus with autism and cancer causing genes at all feels contradictory because, you know, we think some of us of autism as something that you are born with, and then you become a person with autism. You don't expect to become a person without autism. Whereas with cancer, it feels like a time bomb that you could have and it may or may not go off, and you may become a person without cancer, you know? So one feels fleeting and one feels like it starts to define who you are. So tell us more about this research that says they somehow interconnect, because there's a researcher at the University of California, Davis, who recently published a report.
That's right. So when Dr. LaSalle and her colleagues dug into this overlap between autism and cancer genes, they saw that the genes that were linked to both of these are involved in things like cellular activity and fighting damaging assaults on DNA. So those are clues that early in brain development, errors in pathways that maintain the genome's integrity may lead to autism. But if those mistakes happen later in life, they can cause cancer. So I think it's also important to mention, as you said, that people with autism who have these mutations, the mutations occur in every cell in their body. People who develop cancer might have the exact same mutation, but it's isolated to a specific part of the body. In, say, bladder cancer, only the cells lining the bladder have the mutation, and most likely there are other mutations in other genes as well.
So the thinking is that, you know, with autism, this early brain development, you know, in the womb, that's where you might have this PTEN causing this damage that might cause autism, whereas if it occurs after, you know, the early brain development, it later in life, it would cause cancer.
Yeah. So to Dr. Eng, it made sense that a mutation in this gene that leads to cancer could also lead to autism because PTEN is responsible for putting a brake on cell growth and proliferation. Cancer arises when mutations release that brake and cells grow out of control somewhere in the body. When it comes to autism, PTEN mutations release that brake and cause an overgrowth of nerve fibers in the brain.
And therefore affect early brain development. So what does this mean for people, especially children with autism, this particular form that you're talking about where you can see it in physically in larger heads? I mean, you can treat cancer, so can you treat autism?
Well, billions of dollars have been poured into cancer research to produce treatments that zero in on specific mutations. And the hope is that some of those targeted therapies devised for cancers will be beneficial to people with autism who have those same genetic mutations.
Well, you write that researchers say it might be time to borrow from cancer's medicine cabinet. And this is talking about targeted therapy. So would it be as simple as, you know, people with autism being tested for the P10 to see if that cancer-causing gene should be targeted?
Yes. So Dr. Ang suggests that anyone who has – any child that has autism and an autism diagnosis in a large head is tested for P10 for this mutation. But in terms of using drugs to treat autism, we're still a little ways away from that. There have been multiple trials in mice of a cancer drug called rapamycin. Rapamycin targets the pathway that P10 sits on. And when researchers have given rapamycin to these mice, they've seen that the treatment prevents the overgrowth of brain cells that leads to enlarged heads and autism-like behavior. So that has encouraged them to move forward with drug trials in children.
Well, there was a trial last year, 47 people, some taking everolimus, some given a placebo, but there wasn't any noticeable difference in cognitive function between the two. A couple of things. First of all, there's a difference between children, obviously, and mice that are treated from birth on. Maybe their treatment is more successful because their brains are more malleable than the children that were in that test who might have been older.
That's right. So while animal studies have been incredibly promising, researchers are always careful to point out that mice are not humans. And there's no guarantees that the results will be the same. So this year, Karis Eng and her colleague Thomas Frazier, both of the Cleveland Clinic, are launching a trial of everolimus in young children who have the P10 mutation. And the age consideration is something that they are aware of, and they think that the children in the trial are going to skew younger. They have a lot of kids that are 4 years old, 5 years old now, and they're going to roll into the trial over the next couple of years. So in the studies with these drugs, first and foremost, the top priority is ensuring the safety of these drugs in these children. The next step then is analyzing the effects that these drugs have on autism-like behaviors.
You've met families who are going to step into that trial. How do they feel about that? I mean, you know, a child with autism, that's, you know, who the child is. You're talking about the possibility that some of who they are might change.
Many of the parents that I've talked to have talked about the reason that they're interested in participating in these trials is the potential for an improvement in some of the symptoms, such as repetitive behavior or social behavior, communication, cognition. Parents are hopeful that they will find something that will improve the quality of life for their children. The parents that I talk to aren't expecting a cure. They are expecting, they're hoping that they'll see some improvement in their children.
Some relief.
Not that these drugs will entirely change their children.
On the other hand, they now know that there's a cancer-causing gene, you know, in their family line. How are some of them feeling about that? The cancer-causing gene that triggered early and potentially caused autism in their children are still carrying it.
That's one of the primary concerns of these parents. They wonder, will my child get cancer? Does having this mutation increase my child's chances of getting cancer? The answer is nobody knows right now. The children that these researchers study are in, you know, they're toddlers up to 20-somethings, and many of the cancers that are related to these genetic mutations don't arise until people are adults into their 30s, 40s, 50s. So many of these researchers are starting to track these children and planning to track them for years. At the Cleveland Clinic, Dr. Eng, she's on the early lookout for thyroid cancer. It's one of the few that starts early, and it can start in children as young as 4.
Elisa, what overarching thinking is coming out of this? What are people thinking, you know, in a broader way about autism, maybe even about cancer, because of these discoveries?
One of the takeaways here is that so far, only a small fraction of people with autism are known to have genetic mutations that have strong links to the condition. And as more research is done to find genetic mutations that underlie autism, and more genes are being found all the time, The hope is that instead of creating new drugs from scratch, that there are already medicines amid the enormous inventory of cancer drugs that will be effective in treating autism. And it's also possible that just as cancer drugs developed for one type of cancer have turned out to be effective at fighting other types, perhaps a treatment for one subtype of autism will follow a similar arc.
That's Elisa Opar. Her article, Could Cancer Drugs Treat Autism?, recently appeared in the journal Spectrum. We'll link you at hereandnow.org. Elisa, thank you.
Thank you.
And her last comment there, so important. This finding only relates to a small portion of autism cases. But for more, we've linked to her articles and to the latest studies at hereandnow.org.